RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Richard Prebble is a former Labor Party minister and ACT Party leader. He currently holds several directorships, and you may be familiar with his writings in the New Zealand Herald, where he has a regular column. So we thought we'd get Richard on to discuss a range of current politics and economic topics, things he's been commenting on in his opinion pieces in the Herald. So Richard Prebble joins us this morning on Reality Check Radio. Richard, nice to have you on again. Thank you for coming on.
Oh, real pleasure.
How's life?
It's good. It's good. Retirement's better than you might think.
Yeah.
Well, you must have politics. I'm respectable.
You must have packed a hell of a lot in already, though.
Oh, yeah, I've got a bit more to pack in.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Before we get on to some of the specific issues, state of the country, in your view?
Oh, things are tough out there. There's no doubt about that. I think the new government's making a bit of a reasonable job of it. Always do better. But I think we are turning the corner.
Yeah. Okay. Are you seeing it at all? Because I think you're in Rotorua area, and it's been a bit tough in that area over the last number of years. We've heard with the motels, et cetera. What's it like now at this moment?
Rotorua is still doing it hard. And part of the reason for that is that it's a tourist town that, one, attracts New Zealanders, and they've read all the bad news. It's not as bad as the news say. So our New Zealand visitors are down, and the other places that Rotorua is very popular with the Chinese, and the Chinese aren't really back in big numbers. So we're not getting the swing up like Queenstown did, but right. We'll get there.
Okay. On to some issues. Got to get your response to what happened in the weekend re-Trump. Wow, eh?
Oh, I wasn't expecting you to ask me that question. America's a country that's always had assassinations. Republics go with assassinations, you know, in the Great Roman Republic, assassinations were quite common. But assassinations of presidents, thanks to all the security, is now rare. I think there's going to be some embarrassing questions to answer as how somebody got within 200 metres on a roof of Donald Trump. But from what we can see about America, the political temperature is very high. So am I surprised? I don't think anyone is.
Yeah.
I hope it means that they lower the temperature on both sides.
Yeah, I think the media might have had a part to play in that, sort of whipping up mainstream media. I'm talking about whipping up a kind of derangement syndrome. I think they call it Trump derangement syndrome. Do you see any similarities between mainstream media? And I know you didn't know I was going to ask you this, but boy, you've had plenty of experience in media over the years. Mainstream media there, and where mainstream media kind of sits on their, I don't know, the issues that they tend to want to talk about and the issues that they won't talk about. Do you see a similarity?
There is, but let's not go too far with it. I was across in America last year, and in New York, for a variety of reasons, I found myself in an Airbnb flicking through the TV channels. And I hadn't really appreciated how the TV channels we've got here on Sky, you know, Fox and CNN, are actually mainstream. Wow, yeah. There are some TV channels over there that are just completely out to lunch. and the things that people were saying, both on the left and on the right, were just true. I found myself thinking that truly shocking. And we just don't have that. I mean, I look at our mainstream media in New Zealand, and to be blunt, I think the loss of TV3, how would anyone notice? It was just the same as TVNZ. It's a shame we don't have a wider range of views in our media, but I certainly don't regret not having a loony media. I mean, some of the media in America is just simply nuts.
I know what you mean. All right, let's get to some issues that you've been commenting on. I'm looking at your July 10th piece in the Herald, if we don't measure educational achievement, how can we improve it? Why do you think there's a resistance to measure educational improvement, Richard?
Oh, I've got no doubt about it. The teachers' union is set up to protect the worst teachers. If you look at what they advocate, they are basically staunchly defending the 10% of teachers who shouldn't be teaching. And those teachers don't want to be measured. There's nothing unusual about that. Go and look at the teachers' unions around the world, and they are always against measuring. And why is that? Well, when you do measure, you realise that some students haven't actually been taught anything. And I'm speaking from experience here. I think I cited in the article, you know, one of my daughters, which I didn't say in the article, but I was concerned when she was at primary school and it didn't seem to me that she was learning maths properly. I actually went and visited the school on three different occasions, talked to the teacher about it, kept on being assured, no, they were learning the proper maths syllabus. Gets to secondary school, sits a test, gets a terrible mark, and so did every other pupil from her school. And it was basically because the teachers that she had in what I would call Form 1 and Form 2, I don't know what year it is now.
I remember it as that, yep.
Can't remember what it is, but basically didn't learn any maths. Interestingly enough, I went to the secondary school and said, well, what should you do about it? And they said, go to Kit McGrath. Okay. You know, here's a state education system saying go and get private tuition. I went to Kit McGrath, and I hope I don't mind me giving them a bit of an ad, but they put her in front of a computer program and then said, oh, no, she's quite good at maths, just hasn't learnt any for the last 2 years. And in one term, she can catch up. And in one term, she'd caught up. One of the things that comes out of the latest PISA test, you know, the one that the OECD does, and 81 countries participate, and so that we can see what's happening around the world, is that computer learning in maths does work. They say it's, on average, it's another 14 points, which might not mean much, but New Zealand scores about 500. So 14 points is a lot. I think that we ought to take that on board and be helping, because there's another thing we know. About half of all primary school teachers basically didn't pass fifth form maths. I mean, and they're teaching it. It's just 58% didn't pass, haven't got fifth form science, and it's a bit lower than that, but under 50% haven't got the maths, and 14% couldn't pass fifth form English. I mean, it's just truly shocking, and I know that this is just an anecdote, so I can't claim that it stands for anything, but I was in Beijing 10 days ago and talking with a local, and we got talking about education. And he was saying to me that in China, in order to become a primary school teacher, you have to have a university degree.
Wow, okay.
And was saying that his daughter, was it his, one of his relatives, who wanted to be a primary school teacher, was going for her PhD. And China is at the top of that test, just under Singapore. And there we are. We used to be at top, and we're now just above average of the OECD, but the projection that we're on is we're in free fall.
Well, that's really sad to hear.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
We could fix it. I think this present education minister's taking some good steps. Like, let's test first. We shouldn't be waiting till they're 15 years old before we find out that they can't read. Pretty good idea to find out from year one.
All right. Moving on, lessons New Zealand should learn from the US. We just kind of touched on that before, and UK elections. What can we learn, Richard?
Well, if we look at the UK election, interesting lesson for the Labor Party. The present Labor Party is in big trouble. The latest poll that they've got says they're down to 25%. Below 30 for a major party, you're in trouble. And under MMP, there's no guarantee you're going to come back. So there are Labor parties overseas, mighty Labor parties, that now are almost non-existent. The socialists in France, who won the presidency in the past, got 2% in the last presidential election. And the mighty Israeli Labor Party that has governed Israel for longer than any other party since independence, they've now got only 4 MPs. So the New Zealand Labor Party's got to think hard about where they're going. Now, they can do what the British Labor Party did after the, not this election, but the one before. They had Jeremy Corbyn, who's a mad out to lunch lefty. They made him the leader. I mean, he really is out to lunch. And they got absolutely smashed. After the election, they then had a good, hard look at themselves, and they picked Sir Keir Starmer, who's a middle-of-the-road Labour supporter. And what he basically campaigned on was competent government. And if you look at his, that's what he was offering, and the Tories are so incompetent, he's got a huge majority. So I just say to the present Labour Party, you need to have a hard look at yourselves. If you look at what the Labour Party used to stand for, and that was trying to lift ordinary people's standard of living, health, education, welfare, you name it, all went down over 6 years. Our health system's worse, our education system's worse, our welfare system's stack full of people who are able-bodied but on benefits. And what did they give us? They gave us co-governance. They got no electoral mandate for that, didn't mention it in the election campaign, and suddenly came out with what's a constitutional revolution. And if you look at it from one of Labor's core constituencies are the Pacific community. I mean, they've been staunch to Labor, but they look at co-governance and think, hell, where does that leave me? And what it did was it meant they stayed at home. So I say to the Labor Party, they need to have a hard look at themselves. Frankly, I think they should dump their present leader. I mean, he failed as Minister of Education. He's the fellow that promised we'd be on the front of the queue for vaccines. We weren't. And I gave him some good advice when he became Prime Minister. I said to him, you need to set him, go and get a mandate. If you call an election now, with your vision, you've got a chance of winning. If you govern without a mandate till October, you'll be thumped. Well, he was. And so, they basically can't make up their mind who to go to, but they must have someone better than him, I hope.
It's a long walk back, though, isn't it, for them? Because is it fair to say they kind of stuffed the country?
Yep. But it's not the first time the Labor Party stuffed the country. If you go against, frankly, there are the romantic views about the Kirk government. It really didn't handle oil shock very well, and Bill Rowling made a bit of a mess of it. But the Labor Party rebuilt, went out and got talent, actually started to look for talent. And I say that the Longy Labor government's one of the most talented New Zealand's ever had, so you can rebuild.
Yeah, that point you made about mandates, I'm thinking back to 1984 because I can remember back that far. And that happened with the Labor Party at that election. There was no knowledge of what was coming until it arrived. You know what I'm talking about? Basically, the economic revolution that that you were part of. That kind of just arrived. Is it fair to say that?
I know that's the narrative. No, I don't think it's fair to say that.
Okay.
I was making speeches about the need for economic reform. Roger Douglas actually published a number of his papers before the election. He got fired by Bill Rowling for saying what he thought, and then was restored. So people knew what Roger was saying, and they knew he was the finance spokesman. Where I do agree is that things were worse than even we thought. So, I mean, I went through the election campaign saying things are terrible and thought, well, I'm only stretching things a little bit. It's allowed within the colour of politics. And then I found when I was a minister that I'd been understating the case. These are the days before we had official information, before we had the Finance Responsibility Act. We just had no idea that the Prime Minister was issuing letters of guarantee for steel mills and other projects, all of which turned up. I can remember Roger coming into my office one day and said, this letter I've just received from the bank, and that was about the steel mill, and he asked me to look into it, and I found that we're on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars that no MP knew about, no national MP knew about. Mulderner decided himself.
I know we're going off track a bit here, but what do you think was going through his head? When did he think he was like the saviour of the country or something, or the only person who could ever make these decisions?
Well, one of the things I think did happen to him was that he was making the decisions on his own without telling people. And a team always beats an individual. And he just got overwhelmed by the various things that were happening. He's still a smart fellow.
Yeah, well, it still makes me laugh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. One of the scary things I find is that you have to be clever to make really big mistakes.
Yeah, well put.
Stupid people never get the opportunity.
Yeah, they make small mistakes. Yeah. All right, moving on, and this is definitely front of mind at the moment because our Prime Minister's been at the NATO conference. I don't know why I say this over and again, that we're nowhere near Europe, but we're kind of in the NATO club. And I guess we're going against, do you think, our better interests? Because our biggest trading partner is China, and I only hear criticism from NATO of China and Russia, but China comes up. This puts us in an awkward position, doesn't it?
I think that it does. We have had partner status with NATO, but I get a little worried when our Prime Minister's chairing meetings criticising China. Having said that, I don't mind us criticising China, but joining into an alliance against China doesn't seem to me to be a very wise policy. I worry about AUKUS. I can't really see any reason why New Zealand should join. But that's the view that I've got. I actually do worry that our Prime Minister seems to like hobnobbing with people he regards as being A-class people. Bit of a worry.
Biden on top of his game, really? Really?
I watched that debate and it was painful and it's regrettable, but it's clear that age has caught up with President Biden. And I think if he was a bit younger, he'd know he was too old.
Yeah.
Understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But then you've got our Prime Minister saying he's on, you know, I met with him, he's on top of his brief and very sharp.
Well, what else could he say?
yeah, but I mean,
no. There's no foreign leader that was at the NATO meeting who said, I was a bit shocked by President Biden, and I'd be absolutely shocked if our New Zealand Prime Minister went out there and said, I thought he was gaga. No, of course he's going to say polite things about him and polite things about Donald Trump, who's got a very good chance of being the next president.
Yeah, have to anticipate that. The effects of immigration on housing infrastructure and stretched public services, and also we've learnt through quite a few people we've talked to, Richard, on this program, council debt is potentially hitting a very worrying level. Do you think?
I don't think it's a fact. Our immigration policies, trying to think of the nice economic term, they're nuts. have been for years. So we have the situation of people announcing that New Zealand economy has grown. Well, yes, the economy's grown, but individually we're actually poorer. The only reason it's grown is we've had this enormous immigration. I mean, it's record levels. We're talking about, 173,000 new people coming in a year. Give you an idea how much that is. I like to think of my cities. Dunedin's 120,000. You know, we're bringing in more than the population. Yeah. And then we're losing people, 60,000 New Zealanders. Look, they aren't 60,000 people off the dole. We're losing 60,000 people who we've spent a lot of money helping them get skills, who look at this country and decide they'll be better off overseas. And you can't just blame the last Labor government, though they were bad. The Key government was just the same. Why do they do it? Well, it creates an artificial feeling of wealth. People's house values go up when there's more people coming in than we can build houses for. So the average Aucklander suddenly thought they were a millionaire. Well, they're a millionaire until they sell their house and try to buy another one. It's a false sense of prosperity. We've got to come back and I'm in favour of immigration. I'm not totally opposed to it, but we need to have a policy where it's more balanced. We don't even have a population policy in New Zealand. We don't even line up our education system with the skills that we need. So we've got permanent skill shortages in certain areas. And then you go and look and say, well, is anyone training people on those skills? And find out Polytechs are running courses in Kapahaka. And I'm not making that up. My local Polytech, if you have a look at the courses that they're running, and I have young people coming to me and saying, which course should I take? So I pick up their what do they call them, the prospectus that they've got, and half of the courses there, they're criminal that they're offering them, and they're not offering the courses that we need.
All right, well, that's all very useful of the local Polytech in that case. And any comments on the Reserve Bank? I see you've done a piece on wanting the better data for their economic calls.
Oh, look, I'm scathing about our Reserve Bank. We've got inflation for just one reason. If you print money, you get inflation. We've known that for years. We've printed $50 billion. When the COVID crisis happened, it wasn't a shortage of money, and pumping out that extra money without the extra goods, inflation was inevitable. And then they've mucked around in tackling it. I think inflation now is coming down, but it's done a huge amount of damage. And what I find strange is that those responsible haven't been held accountable. The Reserve Bank now has got a huge amount of debt that it didn't have before. No one ever talks about it. But all this printing out of money, that's actually debt. And it's all sitting on the Reserve Bank's balance sheet.
Oh, dear.
absolutely. This country is facing some very, very big, very big problems. I think we're starting to tackle it. We're not doing as much as I would like. We aren't going backwards anymore. Whether we're going forwards and fast enough, maybe I'm just getting old and pessimistic. I don't think so.
We won't end up like the Aotearoa.
We could. We could indeed.
Richard Preble, great to have you back on our program. Good to go through those items that you've been commenting on, hear your thoughts. Look forward to doing it again sometime.
Thank you very much. You're the sort of media we do need.
Well, thank you. That's coming from you. Thank you.
Okay. See you.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.